On the homework, there's always a meditation assignment. It takes 15 minutes in the morning. Most people never do it. You're supposed to write the date and the time that you did your meditation. I don't care if you miss one a week or two a week because you got up late for work, okay? But you must fill that out and you must do it. If you don't do it, you fail the homework and after two of those, you're out of class. I'm going to be very strict this time about it. People, if you're doing a Tunduk and a Dake, then it comes, you can do that during the part about the Yinde Ngande, the mental and verbal recitation. It goes in there, okay?
What do you mean it goes in?
Whatever meditation I've assigned you, you can do during that point, at that point in the Dake. Okay. So no excuse for people doing Dakes, all right? And I'm going to be more strict about that. Then there'll be we're going to have a board meeting of the board of this group. I believe people here on it are, Anila's on it. I don't remember who's I think it's Margie or Anila, Michael, Rick, and you. And then that board will change every year. And we'll have elections after this board finishes. Probably we'll have a rule that to be a member, a legal member, you have to finish three courses, which I think a lot of you have. All right, and that's all. You can go on to the next page, class syllabus. And I'll just go over with you quickly what you're going to be subjected to. In the first class, we're going to cover where did the book come from, who wrote the explanations, what's the meaning of the title, and what were the circumstances under which the Buddha taught this book that you're about to study. Class two, we're going to talk about how emptiness relates to bodhicitta, which is the wish for enlightenment. Why do they go together? Class three, emptiness and the bodies of a Buddha. Okay, when you become a Buddha, you get like four bodies. Some books say three. And we're going to talk about how emptiness relates to that. This is, by the way, the order in which the Diamond Cutter Sutra covers them. Class four, the Buddha in the Diamond Sutra discusses the future of his own teachings. And we'll be covering that. Class five, how do emptiness and karma interrelate? That's a very important subject. Some people think if everything's empty, they can do what they want. And some people think that they should keep morality carefully and emptiness is ridiculous. So those are both extremes. And we'll try to study about how emptiness and karma actually go together. Class six is very important. That's about Tonglen, path of seeing. That's the stage, that's the experience at which you first perceived emptiness directly, which is it's probably the most important moment in a person's practice. And we're going to discuss that experience in detail. Number seven is, how does emptiness relate to getting rid of your mental afflictions, your bad thoughts? Right? And that's very important. How does emptiness relate to becoming an arhat and reaching nirvana? Number eight is emptiness and paradise. How does emptiness relate to gaining a Buddhist paradise? And how does emptiness relate to purification or cleaning yourself of bad karma? Number nine is emptiness and the perfection of wisdom. You're going to get the definition of perfection of wisdom and study that and see why even it has to be empty. And then we're going to talk about the two extremes. Number 10 is very important. Even though things are empty, they do function and they do matter. And we're going to cover that in detail. Class 11, at the end of the Diamond Cutter Sutra, is a very famous poem. Four lines. It's Kama Ribrit Mame Dagima Simba Kabitma, Nilamotam Tunda Duja Chunda Beva Ta. And all monks have to recite it at every monk ceremony. It's very famous, very beautiful. So we'll cover that poem and its meaning as far as impermanence and emptiness. And then you get your review for your final exam. And then class 12 will be final exam. Final exam will be exactly 1 week after the review. and not going to let you take the exam when you want to, because some are still lingering from last fall. The only thing permanent is the exams. That'll be exactly that. I don't promise that we'll end. Next page. The next page is the next few pages. The first two of them, which is refuge, and the next is often the mandala. These are the things we recite before class to give the teaching, and that mandala represents the whole earth. And at the end of the mandala, you pray that that earth could become a paradise for all living beings. So actually, you're doing bodhicitta at the same time. So that's a great. Those two are before class. I think I got the order wrong here. Okay, subject of your class is this. Say Vajra.
Vajra.
Chedika.
Chedika.
Vajra.
Vajra.
Chedika.
Chedika.
Vajra means what? You know?
Diamond.
Diamond. Okay. Diamond. Ched is a. By the way, this is the Sanskrit name, all right? Not the Tibetan name. Ched means to cut something. Cut. And ikka is just an ending. So Vajracchedika means diamond cutter. And that's the name of the book you're going to study. It's a sutra, which means it was taught by an enlightened being. Okay? It's taught by the Buddha. A Buddha. Okay? If something is a sutra, it's taught by a Buddha. There's some other teachings called sutras, but they're not really sutras, like the Vinaya Sutra. But normally sutra means taught by an enlightened being. So we're going to study the Vajracchedika Sutra, taught by Lord Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha, 500 BC. And in Tibetan, the name is this. Say, Dorje.
Dorje.
Shepa.
Kipa.
Dorje.
Dorje.
Shepa.
Kipa.
You've heard the word Dorje a lot if you've been around Tibetan Buddhism at all. Okay? Dorje means diamond. The Do part means stone. Do means stone. J means Lord. So Dorje means Lord of Stones, King of Stones. The king of all stones is the diamond. Dorje. And Chipa again means to cut. You've had, I think, Gesa Chipa before, cutting that virtue root. Remember, we had it in the Karma course. Same verb, okay, to cut something. So the name of the book is Dorje Chipa.
Michael, is this modern Tibetan or is this ancient Tibetan? When you say Tibetan.
Tibetan hasn't changed much since they started writing it about 1100 years ago. Okay? It's changed very little. If you can read a scripture, you can probably read a newspaper, roughly.
So the spoken is different?
Yeah, much different. So there are three or four Tibetans. You don't want to know. Okay, so Dorje Chepa is the name of the book. Spoken by Lord Buddha about 500 BC. It was the first printed book in history. The Chinese edition around 800 was the first printed book. First book used printing and not manuscript writing. It's been a very, very important book in China, Japan, and Mongolia. It was first translated into Chinese in the 4th century, into 300s, by Kumara Vyasa. And it's been very important in China. The Mongolians, and even the Mongolians that I live with, still keep a copy in their house. It's one of the only two books that every Mongolian keeps in their house. They call it Jodba, which is from the Chöpa. And it's been considered very important. It's been considered one of the most important sutras studied in the Far East. In Tibet, it's not studied per se in the monasteries by itself, but it's still considered one of the most important sutras. There are two Indian explanations to this sutra. Okay, two ancient Indian pandits wrote explanations. The first one was Asanga. He wrote an explanation of this sutra. It's in the Tengir. It's in the Buddhist canon. It doesn't look like at that time this was called the Dorje Chöpa, the diamond cutter. It was called the 300, the perfection of wisdom in 300. And I used a computer, I counted the lines, it was 1,200 lines. That means 300 verses, although it's not in verse, but it was still called the 300 shlokas. Okay. And then there's a commentary by Master Kamalashila. Kamalashila. Say Kamalashila.
Kamalashila.
Okay. He's very famous because mostly because of the debate he had in Tibet. He did reach Tibet. He did teach in Tibet. He was invited to Tibet to engage in a debate. The Tibetans weren't sure how to meditate. And this was when they were first becoming Buddhists. So there was a viewpoint that was brought in from China, which was called Qiyangme, which means think about nothing. They believe that during meditation you should seek to just clear your mind of all thoughts and not think about anything. And that was taught by a teacher named Huashang. And Kamalashila represented the traditional Indian viewpoint, which was that meditation should have some content. And that when you go into meditation, you can do a review meditation. You can do a meditation on an outline. You can do a meditation which involves logic. Or you can do a meditation which involves fixing the mind on a visualized picture or on a philosophical concept. But in any of those cases, the mind should be focused on some good object, some meaningful object. So the Chinese representative and Kamalashila had a famous debate in the court of the Tibetan king. And Kamalashila won out. And the old-time debates, as I think Lee and Ariel were at the Explorers Club, right? The old-time debates were very serious. The winner's position would become the position of the whole country. And the loser would be banned. And Huashang was banned from Tibet. And that viewpoint was banned from Tibet. So that's, ever since then, Tibetans have believed in Kamalashila's viewpoint. So in that sense, he's very important. His commentary is very long. It's mostly reflects the views of the mind-only school. He was a great scholar of that. Those are the only two Indian commentaries. Say, Chone.
Chone.
Jarpa.
Jarpa.
Shidu.
Shidu.
Chone.
Chone.
Jarpa.
Jarpa.
Shidu.
Shidu.
Okay. This is Dr. Shedup was a famous scholar from Chone. Chone is in Amdo. Amdo is in East Tibet. Okay. I think they say that there's three great regions of Tibet, the Kham, Amdo, and Utsang. The people from Utsang are great scholars. The people from Kham are great warriors. And I think the people from Amdo are supposed to be great salesmen or something. He was a very great lama, a very, very great scholar. He wrote about 12 volumes. His collected works are about 12 volumes. And he was from the greatest Tibetan monastery of all.
Saramin?
Yeah, yeah. Which is happens to be my home monastery. He was from Saramin Monastery. Saramin is one of the, is part of one of the three great monasteries in Tasa. There were about 10,000 monks there up until 1959. 100 of them survived the Chinese invasion. 100 of them reached India. 107, sorry. So he was from Saramin Monastery. He has written the only commentary in Tibetan to the Diamond Sutra. Tibetans have written probably about 150,000 commentaries. And so far, we haven't been able to locate any other commentary. And this one was very exciting. We located it in St. Petersburg. It was missing. And we found it during the cataloging of the materials in St. Petersburg. So this has just been rediscovered. This has just been found. We knew that it existed, but we thought that all the copies had been burned. All the copies were kept in the Sera Monastery Library, and that was hit by a direct hit by an artillery shell and burned. We didn't want other people to see the commentary and then it ended up being a stupid thing. So we lost all the copies, and it took about 40 years to find one. So you're very fortunate. We're going to study the newly rediscovered, the only Tibetan commentary. And it's a really great commentary. It's about 40 pages long. And it's very good detail. And otherwise, the Diamond Sutra is pretty hard to read. It sounds a little crazy. You know, it keeps repeating itself. And if you don't know what's going on, you think, oh, people must have just added things on over the years and things like that. It's not like that. It has a very concrete structure. And Drakpa Shedup, he really defines that structure very well. So you're going to get readings from this commentary. and from the original. And that's about the only way you could ever study the Dhamma Sutra deep in Tibetan. The Sanskrit commentaries, the one by Kamala Shiva, is very long, very difficult. I think it would be very hard to get through it. It's very high philosophy and hard to study. We do have the Sanskrit text of the Diamond Cutter Sutra, and it's available. There, two editions were found, and we have those, so we can check the Sanskrit when we need to.
Michael, what was this commentary called?
That's on your homework, by the way. the short name is Sunlight on the Path to Freedom, and it means like, suppose you're in the dark and you don't know where to go, and then suddenly the sun suddenly popped up in the sky and the whole day came and you could see exactly where to go. That's the idea. If you didn't have the commentary, it would be very, very hard to understand the Diamond Cutter Sutra. With the commentary, it's like having the sun suddenly rise up in the sky and you can see everything. It's very, very clear. Say Prajna Paramita.
Prajna Paramita.
Prajna Paramita. This is Sanskrit for perfection of wisdom. This is the general name for all of the books which teach about emptiness. And the Diamond Cutter Sutra is one of them. The Diamond Cutter Sutra belongs to the group of books called Prajnaparamita. It's one of the Prajnaparamita books, which means perfection of wisdom. It's the sixth perfection. We had the definition. I don't know if anybody remembers it. Anybody remember the definition of Prajnaparamita?
That wisdom which takes you up to Nirvana?
Nah. Don't remember? We had it a while back, a couple of courses ago. It's the perception of emptiness under the influence of bodhicitta. It's the perception of emptiness under the influence of bodhicitta.
Dhamma
means ultimate, and Dhamma means truth, ultimate truth, which is the same thing as emptiness. So the word diamond, and the idea of a diamond, represents ultimate truth, represents emptiness. Why? Okay, you have to get in. You have to explain that. This relates to the path of seeing. What happens on the path of seeing? The path of seeing, which is there's five levels that you go through in your career, in your spiritual career. You reach the first level when you gain pure renunciation, true renunciation. When you truly are fed up with this life in a really deep way, profound way, and you really want to get out of it, get out of the bad part, that's when you reach the first of the five paths. You reach the second of the five paths when you start to understand emptiness intellectually. Okay. Having gained renunciation, when you start to understand emptiness very well intellectually, you've reached the second path, and there's four levels inside that. Then comes a big moment in your career, in your career. Right? It's called the path of seeing, third path. Path, by the way, just means realization. In Buddhism, Lam, Topa, Wuntho, Dinchi, they're all the same. Right? Realization.